Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Help TVO create a better world through the power of learning. Visit TVO.org and make a tax-deductible donation today.
International car makers, along with the federal and Ontario governments, have injected billions of dollars into the country's automotive sector to spur electric vehicle production. Does it amount finally to Ontario and Canada becoming a global EV superpower? Let's find out with Ontario's Minister of Economic Development, Job Creation and Trade, and the MPP for Nipissing, there's Vic Fedeli. Dennis Darby is here. He's President and CEO of Canadian Manufacturers and Exporters. Josipa Petrunic, President, CEO of Canadian Urban Transit Research and Innovation Consortium. Joanna Kiriazis, Director of Public Affairs for Clean Energy Canada. And Greg Mordew, ArcelorMittal Chair in Advanced Manufacturing Policy and Associate Professor in the Faculty of Engineering at McMaster University. We got a lot of people here today. I want to thank the cast of Ben-Hur for coming in and joining us. Let's get this on the record right now. Ontario's potential zero emissions vehicle supply chain. This is existing sites and emerging ones. Okay, Sheldon, put this graphic up and let's go through what we've got here. 5 mining sites, 4 material processing sites, 8 battery related sites, which include materials, cells, packaging, and components, 26 vehicle parts sites for cars as well as other types of vehicles, 12 vehicle assembly sites, a figure that includes the satellite sites for Stellantis and Toyota, for example. And we actually got more that we can't fit up there. There's 4 advanced manufacturing sites, 2 recycling sites, 2 software sites, 3 charging system sites, 5 fuel cell components and systems. Okay, that's a lot. Minister, you first. Are we the best in the world now?
We absolutely are.
No, no, really.
Yeah.
We are number one in the world for EVs.
We, when you think about where we were 3 years ago when Reuters announced that $300 billion would be spent in EV supply chain and Ontario and Canada, we're getting zero. Today, we're at $28 billion so far, and this will be a spectacular year, so much so that Bloomberg just 3 weeks ago announced that we are now the global number one electric vehicle in the supply chain.
Let me get number some other feedback on that. Do you like where we are right now on this?
Absolutely. Similarly, 2 years ago, we put out a report quantifying the economic potential of Canada's EV battery supply chain. This was right after we landed our first battery gigafactory, Stellantis Battery Plant in Windsor. We looked at 4 scenarios, ranging from the most pessimistic to the most optimistic scenario, which we internally referred to as the moonshot scenario. Mm-hmm. We thought maybe, just maybe, Canada could land one more battery gigafactory. Fast forward 1 year, we have landed not just one, but 2, Northvolt and Volkswagen. Honda's apparently eyeing Ontario for another potential battery plant. We've blown past our moonshot scenario.
Okay, I get it. I go, we got 5 people here. I got to make sure we get enough time for everybody here. Josipa, how do you like where we are?
All right, I'm going to be a bit of a negative Nelly, but only because the truth has to come out. But also we have to look at from pronouncement to reality. So I've drunk the Kool-Aid. We believe in electric buses, hydrogen buses. There's a supply chain there that could benefit in Canada, bus manufacturing, coach manufacturing, rail, from everything that's been invested. So that's a great job. But if we realistically look at where we are as an automaking nation right now, in a manufacturing nation, we're not number one, we're around number 12 or 13, depending on the year. That's okay. It means we're going to aim for the middle and probably land somewhere in the middle in the global EV supply chain in the future. But it will take to sustain from pronouncements through to the next 20 years, keeping the grid clean, carbon pricing still in place to make this stuff green exports, keeping a clean fuel regulation in place, a recycling ecosystem that crops up around this, and maintain supply chain and trade relations with the U.S. and across Canada. Those things have to happen.
Dennis, your view.
I think our potential is great. I mean, we've put all the cards on the table that we need. The problem is now, how do we execute? I think I agree with my panelists, the other panelists. We have to have a supply chain. We have to have business competitiveness. We have to maintain our trade relationships because the alternative to getting these EV mandates, it was Armageddon, because we weren't going, there's nothing else. I mean, this is a change, we have to go with it. So there's lots more investment. So what we've done so far, what governments have done so far is great, but there's a lot more to do.
Greg, your take.
Well, the reality is we paid an enormous price for those 3 battery plants. We have $15 billion of investment. As for incentives, we've ponied up $36 billion. I don't know how you pay $36 billion for $15 billion of stuff, but that's what we've decided to pay. And I'm not in government, but if I was in government, I can think of lots of other better things to do with $36 billion.
You know
than
what?
The
I have somebody.
Three battery plants.
I have somebody in government right here who will answer that question. Okay, he seems to think you're throwing good money after bad on this.
Flat out wrong. I read your column, by the way, and I thought about responding at the time because the actual fact of the matter is that it's not writing a check. These are tax credits for the most part. They're tax credits. So imagine then the company Volkswagen, $7 billion plant. And thank you for the comment. It's my signature on that contract. 362 days of sweat equity to get that here, and it was the moonshot. Had they not come, we don't write a check, we don't have any incentives for them in the future, we don't have a $7 billion investment, and we don't have any jobs. So they do come. We have a $7 billion investment, we have 3,000 direct jobs, about 30,000 indirect, making cathode and anode and separator and all the other six major components. And when they make their production numbers, they get tax credits. So it's not cash that's going out, it's tax credits. You would have no money going out if they didn't come, and you have tax credits going out. So it's not as if you're writing a check to them. That is widely viewed, and incorrectly widely viewed.
What's your issue with that?
Well, the reality is if those investments come and if the industry slows down the way most people anticipate the electric vehicle industry to slow down over a period of time, we could have sat on the sidelines, not to been the early adopter. We could have come in 2027, for example, or 2028, and we wouldn't have been in these Inflation Reduction Act incentives, which start to peter out in 2030, we would have had a much smaller runway of these $4,000 or so per battery incentives that we're going to be pushing out. So $4,000, another 15 seconds later, another $4,000. Yeah. Pretty soon, Minister, it starts to add up.
It's tax credits.
But maybe I can add an element there, Minister, between you and Greg here. I mean, if we take a bit of a historical view, there's no doubt, like eyes wide open, let's go back 14, 15 years, there was a recession. We put a lot of money into Chrysler and General Motors to buy them out, to help them, to prop them up. They didn't end up repaying it all. Between tax credits and loans and financing equity, did they pay it all out? No. The Canadian Federation taxpayers and the federal government did declare in the middle of the 2010s about, you know, $3 billion was lost.
Saved tens of thousands of jobs.
Saved tens of thousands of jobs, but we didn't get back necessarily what we put in directly. Mm-hmm. So the big answer to this is not just that we've got them in. Now the issue is, Greg, how do we retain them? And if we retain these investments, then maybe those ROIs start to emerge. But that retention, Steve and Minister, that retention has to come around retaining that green grid, building that ecosystem, and not sitting on the initial investments that happen that may not pan out the way we think just on themselves, but it's all the things that come down the line through the ecosystem being built out.
Can I get you, Dennis, on the issue of, you know, we heard it mentioned that we're in this early, we're in this to win this, we're in this deep. Would it have been better to wait for others to lead the way and then come in when we sort of have a better understanding of what it takes to be successful?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you have to look at China. I mean, one company, BYD in China, has more employees in their one company than we have in the whole manufacturing sector in Ontario. It is a fight, and you have to be there now. The U.S. has attracted $75 to $80 billion of incremental manufacturing investment mostly through the Inflation Reduction Act. I think, with respect, those 787,000 people and their families, and about 12% of our provincial GDP depends on manufacturing. And automotive manufacturing and the whole parts ecosystem are really important. You're right, you could do something different, but right now there isn't something different on the table. This is where the industry is going. 1965, we signed the Auto Pact. That changed everything in Ontario because you wouldn't have Magna, you wouldn't have Linamar, you wouldn't have Martin Reyes. Some of the biggest auto parts companies came because of a decision, policy decision to help support, indirect invest. We're doing it again. I think it's the right thing to do.
Okay, let's bring a chart up here. Sheldon, can we go to page three, middle of page three? Folks, just look at the monitors here in the studio to see where we're going here. This is worldwide EV sales, both historic and what is projected. And for those listening on podcasts, The first line is a little bit flat. It goes up a little bit, but it's pretty flat. But then as you get into, I guess, out years, 2024 and up, we've got what looks like a ski hill here. The numbers are going high. And I guess, Minister, I want to ask you, how confident are you that these projections are actually going to come to pass? Because there has not been an obsession among the car-buying public right now to buy EVs yet.
Well, two things I would say. First, the investments are here. The $7 billion from Volkswagen is here. And soon, over the next months, you'll hear the other billions of dollars of investments. That's real money from real companies being planted in the ground. Then you tie that into the worldwide, including Canada, mandates. The companies, families are being mandated into the electric vehicle business. We had 100,000 employees working. We had no plans for any of those companies to make EVs. So either you lose those 100,000 like we lost General Motors. Thankfully, we were able to bring them back and have them expand, actually, in Ontario. So they're making the first EVs. They're rolling off the assembly line a year ago, December. So you've got EVs coming off the assembly line. You've got massive investments. And you've got that ski hill that you're referring to, primarily because of the mandates that are coming worldwide.
How confident are you that ski hill graph is going to happen?
Very confident. You know, there's a lot of naysaying going around right now that EV sales are slowing down, but that's just not what the data shows. Canada, this morning, we saw fresh data come out. Our EV sales continue to rise and our rate of sales growth continues to rise. The EU, we're seeing upwards of 20% EV sales now in terms of new car sales. China might be on track for 30 to 40% this year. We're headed in one direction, and I agree that Canada and Ontario are attracting the investments that are needed to be exporting and producing the vehicles that are surely the future.
Dennis, you want in on that?
Yeah, I think one of the things we have to think about is, you know, if it's slowed down at all, it's partly because we haven't got the infrastructure. You know, we haven't got the charging infrastructure outside of some of the major cities. I just came back from Europe and the UK. You know, there's charging everywhere. You know, almost every, you know, every taxi or Uber I got into in London is electric. Many of them from China. There is, you know, there is going to be a bit of a lag as we get used to this, as people get used to the idea that we need to have more charging infrastructure. Ontario is in a great position because we have a mostly clean grid. So I think that chart may not be a straight scale. There may be a couple little flat spots, but I think ultimately that's the direction we're going in. Maybe not for every kind of vehicle. You know, for large trucks, we'll probably have to look at things like hydrogen because of the practicality. But for, you know, for passenger vehicles, I think it's going in that direction.
Josipa?
I'll just say battery electric plants serve the hydrogen market too, because all platforms have batteries. But I'm not going to be negative, Nelly, but I do want us to like pull the wool from our eyes. The reality is exactly as you said, Minister, the mandates are driving this. This is not General Motors woke up and said, let's build electric cars because everybody wants them.
So what do you mean mandates are driving?
The mandates from California, from the United States, in terms of CAFE standards, the corporate average fuel economy standards, the CARB standards.
They just relaxed those CAFE standards.
They did, but still, even still, Steve, the only way by the laws of physics to meet those standards in California and the U.S., which, by the way, we have mimicked in Canada at the federal level, the only way by the laws of physics is power trains that are predominantly plug-in hybrid or fully battery electric or hydrogen. So it is mandates. Now, the reason why that's okay is as voters and consumers, maybe as consumers we wake up, we don't want to buy these cars, they're expensive. But as voters, we keep voting in governments that are passing climate action. So in some way, we're saying as voters, consumers, we do want these cars. Individually, as households, it's tough, but our governments are passing the mandate. To your question, though, Steve, if any of those politics falter, these sales start to drop off in individual households. That means that if we have a federal election and there's no climate policy from the next government or an undoing of the EV standards and regulations, if we don't pass those fuel standards and keep to those fuel standards, if anything falters in the United States, we get a Donald Trump presidency again, and it falters, which he did undo during his term, those sales will start to flatline. So it comes back to the issue of we've invested all this stuff, that's great. The ecosystem has to be more robust than the policies that are mandating household purchases right now.
Greg wants in too.
I want to get back to the what we're talking about, which is the will Canada and Ontario specifically become an EV powerhouse? And we will become an EV participant, and we are, but the power in the automotive industry has always resided with the home of the core automotive companies, being the headquarters of the General Motors, Detroit, Tokyo, Stuttgart, and all of the highest value-added work, the R&D, will happen there, and we will be assigned the role that we've always been assigned, which is fine, it's fine, but we are going to make what we're told in the volumes that we're told when we're told to make them. And that's what Volkswagen will be looking for, that's what LG Stellantis is considering, and that's what the industry has always been predicated on. But we will not become an R&D powerhouse. We have dropped our R&D, despite the preponderance of qualified personnel that are graduated from the McMaster University every year. We have dropped our connection to R&D every year in the automotive industry since the year 2000.
You have a unique ability today to get the minister to shake his head every time you speak, so yeah. I want to give him a chance to respond. We're not doing R&D here. We'll do what we're told, but we won't be the R&D headquarters. What do you say?
Yeah, this is terrible for me to say. Flat out wrong. Like, I'm looking at BrightDrop. This is the General Motors FedEx vehicle that is, you can see in the streets of Toronto today. It's the very first electric vehicle that rolled off the assembly line in Canada a year ago, December. It was designed and engineered in Markham, Ontario, at GM's plant by 700 hardworking men and women. I look at Ford in Ottawa, in their Connected and Autonomous Center. They have 400 employees who are designing products of the future. At Stellantis in Windsor, there are 850 engineers this morning who went to work in one of the two battery design centers that are their North American design centers. This is happening. This is real. We're part of it. You know, I was overseas 15 times last year in Stuttgart, in Tokyo, in Detroit. We are part of this narrative. I meet with the people at Toyota, the people at Honda. I meet with Volkswagen frequently. Volkswagen is here in Toronto almost every month at our offices on Yonge Street. We have a session to go over what we're doing and what we're planning. Tremendous engineering is going on here. Plus, you know, part of our incentives to them were the fact that we graduate 70,000 STEM grads from Ontario universities
every
year.
Science, technology, engineering.
Engineering and math.
And we're short now.
We're short.
And we will need more. And R&D, process R&D is going to happen in these plants. If we are successful at helping small and medium-sized manufacturers be able to serve through the supply chain, that will drive more technology. You're right. We underinvest every year in capital and equipment, and especially in technology. We have for the last 20 years. That's a problem Canada has. You've probably covered it. Our GDP per capita is lower than just about dirt. Mm-hmm. You know, but ultimately, this is an opportunity to try to start reversing that. And so I think I would be loath to say, well, let's pass this one by. This is an opportunity for us to help begin to grow that investment in something that I think globally, the ship has sailed. This is where everything's going. Like I said, the only automotive center you missed is Shanghai, because that's where the real volume is.
Let me pick up on Minister Fedeli's comment here about whether we're going to have the labor force in place to actually do all of what we want to do. And I will ask our director, Sheldon Osmond, I'm at the top of page 4, if you could bring that quote up. This is from a University of Toronto professor who wrote about this in Maclean's magazine. And he said, if Canada hopes to reach net zero emissions by 2050, expanding our presence in the EV industry will be critical. But does Canada have enough skilled, specialized workers to become a global EV superpower, designing and manufacturing the automobiles of the future while helping to achieve our climate goals? The answer, unfortunately, is probably not, unless we take decisive action. It all starts with the youth. These days, students aren't thinking about working in or near a factory. Let's get some feedback on that. First of all, okay, Josipa, take that on. What do you say?
Yeah, so definitely accurate. Already in the industry right now, I'll just talk about bus and coach, very niche industry. TTC has a couple hundred buses that are electric. There's a few hundred around the province right now. We're talking about small volume compared to cars. There are no workers. There's already no people to work on those vehicles, maintain, operate, et cetera. So we already know the colleges need to ramp up their programs. A few years ago, we were ahead of the curve. Now we're behind the curve. Yeah. It can be done. But this is part of the issue that I've raised before, and I think the minister would agree. To invest in this ecosystem is the start to maintain it is the ecosystem, and that maintenance means pumping money into universities and colleges. And we just have Queen's University in the news talking about maybe going bankrupt. We've got colleges and universities strapped for cash. So this is part of what government has to look at, is the other side of the equation is keeping it going. That means pumping money into universities and colleges that we haven't done.
If Queen's were represented at this table, they would want me to say, we're not going bankrupt. Yeah. We're having some financial problems, but we're not going bankrupt. On this issue of whether or not we've got the workers of the future to deal with all this, what say you?
Well, a couple of things. We're getting there. The colleges, for instance, my college, Canada College in North Bay, have now stopped auto mechanics programs. They now have EV technician programs. Go to Milton. There's a collision center, an EV collision center, training 700 people, because the metals in an electric vehicle are completely different than the metals in a traditional internal combustion engine vehicle. So we're training people there. In our Ministry of Labor, in the skills development file, this is the real issue that you're looking at. We have hundreds of $230 million in one program, $75 million in another, to bring these kids into the skills training that is going to be needed to assemble vehicles, to make batteries. We've got a long way to go yet, but we've got a couple of year runway till the battery plants start. If Fanshawe College is doing a remarkable job with VW, we're building a facility outside of VW with Fanshawe to train kids, to our students to make those batteries. So we're getting there, and we'll have to scramble to keep up.
Yeah,
and you want to come back, Adam,
I do. I think now on this piece, that is right. Of course, you know, hindsight is 2020. We all wish we had done it 5 years ago. Right. It takes 4 years to build a program. Would have been great to have those engineers. It is what it is. We will create that. But the second piece of this, and this is back to the ecosystem, is this is an opportunity, if not a requirement, of the province and the federal government to work on immigration policy. We have an open opportunity here. We do not have enough bodies in this country to train to feed this industry. We need bodies coming in from outside this country. We have an immigration, quote unquote, crisis right now in the country as to what we're doing, how many people, how many bodies, what skills. This is an excellent opportunity to say, we plunk these billions of dollars into these investments. We're not sure they're going to exist unless we feed this supply chain. We're going to start altering immigration policy to match the needs specifically of this high cost industry.
Well,
those two things are part of that ecosystem. I think we're seeing the starts, but we've got a lot of steps.
Okay, then I got two things I got to raise here. Number one, we got a federal government that just cut the number of student visas by half coming into the country. So that sounds like it's going in the opposite direction of what you think we need. Number two, we got the province's own, you'll forgive me for raising this, we got the province's own blue ribbon panel advising the Minister of Colleges and Universities on how much money needs to go into the system. They've recommended $2.5 billion. Minister made an announcement for $1.3 billion, about half of what its own blue ribbon panel thinks needs to happen to get the job done. Where does all that leave us? Go ahead, fire away.
I mean, I think the transition to zero emission vehicles just provides a great opportunity to attract new youth that are, you know, climate focused. They understand the climate changes.
So why aren't the governments of the day making the decisions that need to be made? There you go. Maybe that's a question for you.
Well, quite frankly, this one is aimed squarely at the feds, who have arbitrarily, without any discussion with any minister.
They dispute that.
I got this firsthand from our Minister of Education on Sunday when I asked her about it, because I was thinking about, you know, what I'm going to answer you when you ask me that question.
I know she said that publicly at her press conference. You're talking Jill Dunlop?
Jill Dunlop.
Yeah, but the federal minister disputes that. Anyway.
Either way, we're going to have a real shortage. We took in Ontario officially 500,000 immigrants last year. Unofficially, we think it's more like 800,000 when they landed in Montreal or Vancouver, and we think they came here. Mm-hmm. So we're relying, with what you're saying, we're relying on those immigrants to help us create that job bank, that job pool. We've got other immigration programs that we've increased. One of them's increased to 18,000, but we're siloed here in Ontario. We've said to the Prime Minister, give us the same deal you've given Quebec. They have a number. They can do whatever they want with the immigrants. Us, they're all in these little silos. This one is for business. This one is for education.
Okay,
that has to change.
I'm going to ask Dennis another unhelpful question here, which is, if you're depending on the post-secondary system of this province to create enough skilled workers of the future to buy into this vision and help make it happen, does it help if you're the 10th out of 10 provinces in per student funding per capita?
As we are. It sure doesn't help, but it does require governments to make incremental investments. I think everyone said the same thing. What's been put on the table is the beginning. We need to put more money into upskilling. First of all, we have 18,000 people a year who are retiring because the baby boom is disappearing. We're disappearing from the workforce. So we have to replace those. We have to make sure we have targeted immigration, economic immigrants. And we have to make sure that we are actually spending money on upskilling, because there are employees in there that need to be upskilled. But right now, Ontario, we have a huge hill to climb. We have tens of thousands of unfilled positions. Now, I'm hopeful that manufacturing, because of these high-tech opportunities, because of the change and the increase in investment, we'll get more than our fair share. But we're really just moving sand around on the sandbox. There's no more sand coming in until we begin to fill the pipe of it.
Okay. Let me pick up on something you said a moment ago, and that is when we were talking about the automotive capitals of the world, you said, and don't forget Shanghai. Mm. So, Greg, let me pop you in at this point and say, how are we doing in terms of competing against China, which seems to be eating everybody's lunch in this field these days?
Well, at the end of the day, we've been told that these investors are attracted to Canada in general, Ontario specifically, because of clean energy. The reality is the preponderance of battery plants that have been built in North America have been built in places that where the electricity is generated by coal.
Not here. But elsewhere.
So they are, in other words, they are prepared to invest in battery plants where clean energy is not a thing. We've been told, and this is back to our previous conversation, and I think this is where I get the minister to nod his head. I believe that, in fact, that we will be able to have sufficient quantities of people to build these batteries and all the other parts to make Ontario an EV-capable jurisdiction in 2050. That's because the automotive industry has always paid a premium. These are good jobs. These will be good jobs, and they will. And the auto industry will cream the employment crop, and they will get people. I don't know. And in fact, I think Dennis has a pretty good idea about the rest of the industry and the rest of manufacturing. They may have trouble, but insofar as the EV industry and the automotive industry, if we hold true to the long-standing process of paying well, we'll be fine.
Do we get a nodding of the head on that
two,
one?
Two nods.
Two nods, okay.
First of all, on the point about meeting the employee numbers, I absolutely agree with you. But your earlier point is the most fascinating, right? This is part of our value proposition around the world. I say, you can go to the States, go to Kentucky, and have your battery built. 6% clean energy. They use coal. Go to Alabama and have your vehicle assembled. 18% clean energy. Build your car with steel made from coal. Or you can come to Ontario. You have 94%, arguably, clean energy assembling the vehicle. We'll sell clean energy credits to Stellantis and to Volkswagen. They'll have 100% clean energy battery. And thanks to ArcelorMittal, DeFasco, you are having the switch from coal to electric arc furnace, you will have green steel. Now think about driving with pride a vehicle built in Ontario with clean energy, green steel, versus any car built anywhere in the U.S.
Josipa.
This is a real proposition, and this one I do want us to get into a little bit here. The reality is anything built in Ontario and Canada is going to be expensive, right? We're not paying Mexican wages here. That's the truth of it. But what is the real proposition, exactly as the minister flagged and so did Greg? It is the green electricity. Mm-hmm. And this is not because these plants, again, have woken up as manufacturing CEOs and said, let's go green. Because if they had, they wouldn't have spent the last 15 years trying to sue the government of the United States to undo climate action, right? Mm-hmm. So what has happened is there's enough governments have moved ahead saying, you're going to be hit with carbon pricing at the border. Mm-hmm. That's going to drive up the price of your products, no matter where you built it, in coal producing, whatever jurisdiction of the world, it's going to become extremely expensive. You won't be able to sell your stuff. So now the proposition is really there, that we have a green grid. Back to my original point, though, the real ability to keep this investment through the long term in the ecosystem is to make sure our grid stays green, which means no to natural gas plants. It does mean upgrading Darlington and nuclear. It does mean continuing the investments in green energy. Those things have to happen, yet we're facing a political environment, provincially and federally, where the shift back to lesser green forms of energy is a real dialogue.
They insist it's temporary.
Okay, but also federally, we're coming into a federal election where at least one of the major political parties is talking about undoing carbon pricing and all of the fuel economy standards and clean fuel standards that are driving this very proposition. These are real political issues that have a market impact for us to be able to extend this investment.
Let me pick up on that market impact issue with Joanna. I wonder if you think that consumers care about whether or not they buy a car that is made from a jurisdiction with a clean grid, or they're just interested in how long will that battery last and what kind of mileage can I get from it? You tell me.
Well, certainly there have been a lot of questions about how clean are electric vehicles. And so consumers who are making the shift, whether for environmental or cost-saving purposes, do want to know that that car is as clean as it can be. But I just want to go back. It's not just policies that are moving us to the greener vehicles and the greener electricity sources. It is manufacturers who are setting some of these targets themselves. As automakers are shifting to electric vehicles, they're also wanting to clean up their supply chains. And so, yes, clean electricity is a huge value proposition. Every single one of the major investments that we've seen coming into Canada's battery supply chain, Umicore, General Motors, Volkswagen, Stellantis, they all list clean electricity as a major selling point.
What about consumers, though? Do they care as much?
I think they do. But you know what? Consumers, at the end of the day, care most about cost savings. Mm-hmm. And EVs provide those as well, right? We've done we've run the numbers, and Canadian drivers can save thousands of dollars per year by going electric. Now, I do want to say one of the ways that Ontario can continue to supercharge our shift to EVs and support our manufacturing sector is by bringing back some of those consumer supports.
I was just going to raise
Canadians,
that. I was just
going to
raise
those
that.
Vehicles.
Okay, when you guys came in, sorry to bring up bad memories here, but when you guys came in, one of the first things you did was cancel all those incentives to buy electric vehicles that the previous government had put in place. Fortunately for people who want to buy those cars, the federal Liberals stepped in and they put some of those incentives in there. Are you considering bringing them back?
We have made a conscious decision. First of all those incentives would be to buy cars with dirty coal doors and steel, dirty assembly, and a very dirty battery. And that's, you know, we're just not interested in spending taxpayers' dollars on that. What we are interested in was saving the 100,000 jobs and growing that business, stopping the STEM out the door, stemming that out the door flow of jobs, stopping that, which we've done, and turning it around. We've added at least 20,000 jobs. So it's gone from 100,000 to 120,000. That's where we believe the taxpayer dollars should be, is building the businesses to create those tens of thousands of jobs.
Let me get Dennis on that. Do you think they should bring the incentives back?
In other markets, it's worked. It's helped spur demand while the industry, you know, and it figures out how to make batteries cheaper, how to increase range. So it has worked in other jurisdictions. You know, that you can't deny that. And yes, carbon taxes do work because for industry and for consumers, the price of not converting, whether you're a manufacturer and you're trying to, you know, heating an oven, or you're trying to run a production line, moving from gas to electricity will ultimately be cheaper for you. It's going to be similar for consumers. So there's a carrot and a stick. There's a carrot in the form of an EV credit. There's a stick because it's called the carbon tax. At the end of the day, you have to do both. But frankly, you know, where the governments have intervened more, you've seen a higher uptake.
Okay. We've got a few minutes left here, and I want to raise one more issue. You wouldn't know it today because it's beautiful outside today. But most of the time in March in this country, it's cold. And these are, I know this personally, I drive a Volt. I love my Volt. It's 11 years old. I got a subsidy to purchase it, which was very helpful. But there's no question that the battery goes a lot less far in the wintertime than it does in the summertime. That's just a fact. Minister, are these cars going to take off knowing what the weather's like most of the time in this country in the winter?
Yeah, I think General Motors testing facility up in Kapuskasing, which is I've been there many times. It's very chilly. You know that you've been up in camp. You know, there is great advances being made in battery technology every day. The battery today looks absolutely unlike the battery when we first explored it 3 years ago, and I think will continue to develop, and I think you will have a very satisfied consumer at the end.
Do you share that confidence?
I think it comes from a different place. I mean, battery innovation is hitting a wall in terms of manufacturing and price. So the reality is your electric car, your hydrogen car are always going to drop off about 20-30% in their range. And not just in winter, in the summer when you turn on the AC and the auxiliary load, right? So part of the solution is not more battery, more density, more battery, more money. It's actually more charging. And more charging at the cost of manufacturers. The automakers have to get better at putting out charging systems that they bake into the price of their vehicle. And I've said it many times, this is not something the taxpayer has to pay for, except for indigenous rural communities where there's an equity issue. What we're talking about is General Motors, Toyota, Ford, all of them have to get on the bandwagon of offering charging as a service as part of their vehicles. More charging, less battery, less battery, less waste. That is part of the solution.
Joanna, would you agree that this stuff is not going to take, it's not going to become that ski slope that we saw earlier on that graph until people know they can drive to the cottage and not have to worry about that range anxiety?
Absolutely. We need to have our charging infrastructure in place. And this Minister Fedeli's government has done a great job in Ontario moving forward on charging by introducing a charging program to help smaller and medium-sized communities, introducing an ultra-low electricity price to charge at home, which, by the way, allows me to fully charge my electric Kona for $1.79. Okay? But battery technology is getting better. And I just look at cold weather countries and cities. You know, we've got Norway that has upwards of 90% of new car sales being electric. I look at Sudbury, Ontario, which has higher than provincial and national average levels of uptake.
Yeah, I saw that. 49% increase from the previous year, year over year.
EVs do just fine in the winter. And in fact, they're a lot better in many ways where I can remote warm my car. You know, it heats up in 2 minutes instead of 20. And gas cars struggle in the cold as well. You know, we aren't reporting on it as much. Gas cars have twice as many starting problems as electric vehicles. So I think we've just got to keep our heads on straight here.
Last 30 seconds here.
I think I'm going to be hopeful. I mean, automobiles, internal combustion engine cars were not nearly as efficient nor as clean 50 years ago. They are much cleaner and much more efficient than ever. This will happen with battery electric. Innovations will happen. They will become cheaper. They will become more efficient. They'll have longer range. In between, we'll have plug-in hybrids. But I think we should look forward and say, yes, the innovation will continue.
As I thank everybody for coming on the program, Director, can I get a wide shot, please? I would like to, first of all, I want to thank everybody for coming, but in particular you, for a couple of reasons. Number one, I know you got Treasury Board today. You postponed that so you could come and do this program. I appreciate that. Number two, do you know how hard it is for us to get ministers of your government to come on this bloody program? And never mind they won't come on, you know, with other people. They won't even do one-on-ones with us sometimes. So I am grateful to Minister Fedeli for coming on the program, not just himself, but also with a crowd of others, some of whom had a few critical things to say. So good on you, and tell your friends this is not such a terrible experience.
Well, let me just say the final word then, if you don't mind. A fascinating statistic. In 2023, Ontario created more manufacturing jobs than all 50 U.S. states combined. That's the might of what's happening here in Ontario.
And the might of this program. Maybe not. Anyway, thanks, everybody. Appreciate your time very much tonight.
The Agenda with Steve Paikin is made possible through generous philanthropic contributions from viewers like you. Thank you for supporting TVO's journalism.